Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for listening to me, especially on this weekend. Hey, this is a holiday weekend. Just want to send a shout out to the, hope everybody's being safe. Be careful out there. The holidays are the holidays. Watch people doing some excessive drinking, so watch out for the other driver and all of that kind of good stuff, okay? At any rate, today we've got some very interesting things to talk about. Main topic for today is going to be a discussion on the public health crisis of gun violence. It's a very interesting subject. Did some research on this, and this is something that, you know, I think needs to be discussed because we always talk about this thing about gun violence, mental health, is it this or is it that? So there's some other interesting perspectives out there that we'll get ready to talk about here shortly. But before we do that, as always, if you have any questions or comments, and by the way, if you have any particular topic that you would like to have me research or talk about on the air, send me an email, as so many people do. And if you want to call in because you have a question or comment, as always, 818-602-4929. All right, 818-602-4929. Or you can go to our website and find the number there as well. And if you want to send me an email, like, feel free to do that as well. Listen up with JP at PottsAndAssociates.com. That's listen up with JP at PottsAndAssociates.com. Hey, and by the way, if you want to get on my email blast, for every week we send out, let you know what the topics are about the upcoming show topics, text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email. Again, just text to Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. And before I forget, hey, thank you for all of you that have purchased my new book, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. For those of you who do not know about that, you can go online at www.lulu.com and pick up that book. We've gotten a really good response on that. So thank you for all of you that have made those purchases to date. Okay, listen, the first thing I want to do is send a shout out here on this business of the Odessa shootout here. These are the sad things that we hear about. And, this all started with a traffic stop, a simple traffic stop. And now five people are killed, including the gunman, and 21 others were injured. This guy just basically went on a rampage in two different cities, quite frankly. One was in Midland, Texas, and the other one was in Odessa, Texas, and which is in West Texas, actually. And they finally got him, but he was at the Multiplex Cinema Complex in Odessa where they found him, and that's where he was killed. And, these cinema complexes, these are like those big malls and things of that nature, and you've heard me talk about the malls. They initially thought that there were two shooters and two separate vehicles driving around that city, but apparently it's not that serious. It looks like it may only have been one shooter, so thank goodness for that. And somehow or another, this guy hijacked a U.S. mail carrier truck, and went on this. I guess he got out of his vehicle and ran and got into his other truck and took off. Three police officers were wounded in that, so hopefully they'll have a speedy recovery, along with the other people also that were injured at that time. But, again, it signals you to always be careful because now we're not talking about a confined place or an event, of any particular kind. Now, this was all about just going about your daily lives, and this is a running gun battle. So for those of you that have taken my active shooter class, remember what I told you, that if you're on the street, this is one of those situations where you take proper cover, where your barriers are, use good judgments, don't walk to the outside of the street side of the curb, walk toward the inside. I mean, this was gunfire that began with this traffic, and then it was an ongoing battle, so to speak. So, again, you got to pay attention to the things that are going on around you. When you're out and about, as I've said before, always look for cover. Look for barriers. So if something does happen like this that's, very surprising, you already know what you're going to do. All right? So we'll see how this turns out. I mean, the shooter is dead. Once again, we're not going to know, you know, why he did what he did. It was just a simple traffic stop, and maybe he had something going on that the law enforcement officers did not know about at the time. But at any rate, shout out to all of those who were wounded. Hopefully, you'll recover quickly. And, you know, I'm glad that the shooter was subdued so he didn't take out any more carnage on the people. But anyway, now, the other thing I want to mention to you is this business about ransomware attacks. Before we move on, ransomware is where you may have heard me talk about this on the show before, about being able to safeguard your information. Now, just to let you know, there are now 22 cities in the last few months that have been attacked with ransomware. And for those of you that don't know what that means, that's when these hackers basically go into either a city or a county or a business, and they basically hack into this system and basically shut the system down. And in order for you to be able to get your system back up and save all of that data, you got to pay them X numbers of dollars in order to do that. Let me just tell you something. They've been doing this with cities, believe it or not, police stations, schools. All of this has been on the rise, and it's been costing millions for some of these people to pay off these perpetrators. And it's really amazing. I don't understand, quite frankly, why, you know, these systems aren't, you know, better prepared for this since they know that it's going on. I know last year we had a person on the show that talked about how to protect your private computers and things of that nature. But again, you would think government entities, these schools, you would think that they would all have this already wired since they know people are doing these things. So again, there's been 22 known attacks this year alone with this. And, you know, it's getting to be quite frustrating. And when you go back in time, I mean, in the years preceding this, the numbers were lower. You know, 2016, they had 46, 2017, 38, 53 last year. And now, this year alone, 22. So hopefully it won't get any higher than that, so we'll be able to say that it's one of the lowest years, but it's still out there. So for those of you that are business owners, you want to make sure that you are, in fact, protecting your businesses as well from this. So get with those IT people, do whatever you have to do. For those of you that have home computers, remember what we told you about that on one of the previous shows. Now, the United States says that this most recent attacks have been by Iranians. And these guys apparently were responsible for the two most destructive municipal ransomware attacks in the United States. And it took place recently in Atlanta and Newark. And the ransomware was called SamSam. All right. And they wanted more. They extorted more than $6 million. $6 million. But it cost $30 million in damage. Now, be careful with these things. Don't open up strange emails. Don't do any of that. You don't recognize it, don't open it up. All right. So anyway, that's just a caution out there. Once again, for my business owner clients that are out there, make sure that you are getting with your IT people and doing what you can to prevent this ransomware attacks. Okay, having said that, let's move into the email situation, because you know I always like to read off at least three emails, so let's get busy with that. And again, anybody wants to call in a comment anywhere along the line is fine with me. Anyway, Jim, I recently heard that the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter is going to face a death penalty in Pennsylvania. I was glad to hear that because he deserves to die for what he did. The problem I see is that Pennsylvania has not executed anyone since 1999. This tells me he will probably never pay the ultimate price. What's your opinion, Joe, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? Well, Joe, let me just tell you something. In all honesty, Pennsylvania actually has the third highest rate of executions, to be perfectly honest. They actually started their executions way back in 1693, believe it or not. And since that time, they've had 1,043 executions. Now, let me just tell you that, and for those of you don't remember this, this was last year in October. It was the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. Now, let me just tell you something. You're incorrect on what you're saying here, because you're right on the fact that they are going to do, he is going to be prosecuted, you know, with the death penalty hanging over his head. But it's not from Pennsylvania. It's actually the feds, believe it or not. So the federal law, because of the type of shooting, since it was a hate crime, it's actually the feds that are going to prosecute him from a federal perspective. Now, I'll tell you, that one concerns me more than the Pittsburgh one, and I'll tell you why. The Pennsylvania, rather. Because believe it or not, the feds have not really executed that many people. So my concern is still your concern. You were thinking Pennsylvania and that maybe something won't happen. But let me just tell you, there's been three executions since 1963 by the federal government. Only three. So I'm more concerned that he's being prosecuted on the federal side versus the Pennsylvania side. So let me just tell you, and you guys might remember this, Timothy McVeigh. Now, remember what I told you, since 1963. So the first person executed since 1963 by the feds, you might remember this name, Timothy McVeigh. And for those of you who don't remember that, he got executed in June of 2001, but that was because he was one that did the Oklahoma bombing, okay? So he murdered eight federal law enforcement officers through the 1995 bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma. So because there were eight federal law enforcement officers who got killed, that's why they prosecuted him federally. But he did pay for that crime. The bombing was in 1995. He was executed six years later. So from that perspective, they moved pretty quick on things. Now, the second one was Juan Raul Garza in 2001. Now, McVeigh was executed on June 11th. Garza was executed on June 19th, 2001, so just 8 days later. And he got executed in Texas, actually, is where the crime occurred. But again, from a federal standpoint, and he apparently had murdered this gentleman by the name of Thomas Rumbo, and then he ordered the murders of about a half a dozen other people, to make a long story short, and it had to do with a drug smuggling ring. But so because it was drug smuggling on an international, the feds got involved in it. And then the last one was Lewis Jones in March 18th of 2003, 2 years later, and that was for the rape and murder of Private Tracy McBride, also in Texas. So those are all federal crimes, and that's why they were executed. But again, this is 2003. This is 2019. So they don't really have a strong history. But I will say that, if you ask me my opinion, I will say that probably based on the fact that this is a serious crime with a hate crime, and I think that they are starting to try to clamp down now on some things to try to put an end to some of this. He may swing. I don't know. The swing meaning, you know, back in the day he said swing, you know, meaning hanging, but they don't do hanging anymore. So they'll probably do the lethal injection or something else. I'm not sure at this point on the federal level what they do. So to make a long story short, Joe, you're on the right track. And I really do. I'm with you. I really hope he gets to pay the price. But because I also think we have to send a strong message to these hate crimes and these people that are murdering people just at random like this. And I shouldn't say that because that wasn't really at random. I mean, he specifically went to the synagogue to do that. But any of these hate crimes, in my opinion, are absolutely wrong. So we'll see what happens. We got to remember, he, first of all, has to get convicted. And he's probably going to appeal. And then we'll go from there. All right. And the appeal process could take a while because appeals do take time. Okay. Let's keep moving. Jim, I'm confused. I know you have, discussed different hate groups in the country. I just saw on the news that the Democratic candidates are proposing to expand the war on terror to counter white supremacy. Now, I have a real problem with this because what about the other groups? Why are they singling out whites for this? It seems like everything is pointed at white people, yet there are black groups who also are dangerous. I don't think that is right. I would like to hear your opinion. And this is signed anonymous. Well, look, it's true that the candidates are talking about these different things. I think politicians in general, I don't want to label just the Democratic candidates. I think politicians in general are talking about these things. It is disturbing any time that we hear about one group that they may be going after. Now, on previous shows, I've talked about white supremacy, and there was a lot of different groups that make up white supremacist groups. So I think that when they say white supremacists, that they're going in terms of a broad category. And I don't think that every white supremacist group out there, just like some of these other groups that are, you know, spewing all of this ideologies out there, they don't necessarily all do violent things. They may have an ideology, but they don't actually take and move on some of those ideologies in terms of, from a violent standpoint. They're just spreading their venom, so to speak. But I do agree with you. I don't think any one group should just be, singled out like that. I think that's wrong. But again, right now with the political situation, again, not taking sides, but, these people that are in politics or running for these different offices, they point fingers because they're trying to stir up the general population and they're trying to get the votes. So when they come out with these things, they just say it now. Quite frankly, we've heard all of this rhetoric before. But when people get in office or get in these positions, then once again, this stuff starts to disappear. But it's true that the candidates are proposing to expand the war on terrorism to counter white supremacist violence. Now, I will tell you that before the El Paso attack, the FBI in July said that the Bureau had recorded about 90 domestic terrorism arrests in the previous 9 months, compared with now about 100 or so. Now, because that was before and after. Now, what's interesting about that is that those weren't just white supremacist groups. They were from, all different areas. So I don't ever think it's right to single out a particular group. If we're going to go out and have a war on terrorism, let's include everybody that acts in a violent manner. I don't care what the color is, all right? What their background is or what their national origin is. Domestic terrorism is domestic terrorism, and I don't care who is doing it. We should be going after all of them. So I would agree with you from the standpoint that I don't think we should be singling out any one group. But then again, that's the rhetoric when you're running for office right now. They're afraid to say anything else, so they're going to point it out. They're going to work on people's emotions and, end of story. I mean, I can understand why you put anonymous here. I'm assuming you're listening, because also people don't want, to get the backlash because you put your name or whatever the case may be. And I get that. I never give last names anyway, although sometimes I have the last names on there. I don't ever give the last names. Now, I will tell you that the Justice Department, through the FBI, has also thwarted, ready for this, 7 mass shootings, 7, including attacks planned by alleged white supremacists. But those arrests were unlikely to be designated as domestic terrorism or face any federal terrorism-related charges. Every one of these things, you have to understand, stands on their own merits in terms of the facts. All right, so when we hear about these things, just because the person is Caucasian doesn't mean that they're a white supremacist. But it's easy for people to throw people into categories because that's just the easiest way to do it. So I think that that's wrong. All right, some of these active shooters that are shooting people, I mean, think about it. The Gilroy situation at the Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California. That guy just started shooting. He wasn't singling people out. Only shooting the white people or the black people or the Latino people or whatever. He wasn't doing that. Now, it's true that the El Paso shooter indicated that he was going after the Latino community. And obviously that was wrong. But these shooters sometimes don't tell us why. They just do it. And look at the shooter in Las Vegas. You think he was just picking out certain people? The answer is no. And he was Caucasian. So I don't necessarily agree with some of these things that they're talking about. I think if you want to have a proposal for war on terrorism, Anonymous, I think that's, that would be a good thing. And I don't mind the candidates or politicians talking about that, but I don't think you should be singling out any one group. I think that's problematic, and I think that that's trying to get votes from probably the minority communities. But then when you do that, it also sets you apart from the other community that's out there because they're wondering, well, why don't you bring up everybody versus just the one group? Now, let's be real. Since 9/11, the counterterrorism has been a top priority for the FBI. I mean, that's true. I mean, their priority, I mean, it's been clear. I've talked about the FBI and people they've been catching. I know from a law enforcement standpoint that those individuals at the Bureau are working very, very hard. And they're not singling out anybody. They're going after everybody. All right? So, their priority is even topped education, the economy and healthcare, everything. Research has determined that the FBI, what they're doing is topping every other, category, all right? So, I don't know. We hear all this debate about domestic terrorism, civil liberties, oversight and transparency. These are all buzzwords, in my opinion. You know, they're always yelling oversight, oversight, transparency, transparency. It doesn't matter, because then if one group does it, the other group says, hey, you're not being transparent. So it's all a bunch of political nonsense, in my opinion. So that's why I give credit to the Bureau, because what they're doing is trying to create an offense that applies to the most common means of who's committing these terrorist acts, regardless of ideology. You know, and these mass shootings, these people aren't out here singling people out, for the most part. You know, they're just shooting to kill human beings, and they're not singling anybody out. You know, here's the biggest thing to remember. Prevention. Prevention, you guys, is really the only way to stop domestic terrorism attacks. Having people also be aware. They're looking around. They're reporting things that they see. Doesn't matter what background they are, where they're from. You know, if you see it, report it. That's the bottom line. If you see it, say something. This is all about crime prevention, in my opinion, because all of these things are crimes. And as a former law enforcement officer, hey, I look at it like these are crimes, and we have to stop the criminal behavior in this area. And like I said, the topic is really broad when they start talking about white supremacists, you know, going after them, when there's so many other groups, in my opinion, that we need to be looking at as well. So, you know, there's over 1,000 hate groups in this country. And, you know, how many of those make up white supremacist groups? Give me a break. Everybody that puts it out there to kill people, in my opinion, we should be going after all of them and not singling out any one particular group. So these candidates that are mentioning that, in my opinion, like that, they're vote getters because they're trying to get the votes from the minority community. And, you know, you can't just be one-sided, in my opinion. It's like this radio show. What do I say? I don't take sides politically speaking. I don't take the left. I don't take the right. Why? My concern is for everybody. So any proposals, in my opinion, that should be put out there regarding, you know, domestic terrorism in general, no matter who's doing it. So I hope I've answered your question, Anonymous. Okay, let's go to the next one. Jim, this business about sanctuary cities is getting ridiculous. Now I hear that the illegal that shot the girl in the back in California may get off on all charges. That doesn't seem right. Do you agree at some point people are going to rebel on this issue? Curious George from Las Vegas. Okay, Curious George. Well, look, the jury, okay, and granted, it was in the Bay Area, found him not guilty on all of the charges with the exception of one charge. And yes, I did hear about the fact that he is going to get off. But remember, that's a sanctuary city. So he was in a situation where, you know, there's a sympathetic cause, so to speak, regarding quote-unquote illegals, all right? So the other charge that he's getting off on, which was the only charge he was convicted of, it looks like they're going to reverse, or they have reversed that situation. So, yes, he could end up walking. But, you know, that's also the downside to this business about these sanctuary cities. Now, I know there's a lot of feelings about this on both sides of the aisle, but, you know, I think that when it comes to, once again, to the judicial system, unfortunately, the judicial system is not a perfect system. So there are times when people are going to get off. Look, juries hear all of the facts, all of the details. So keep that in mind. They get to hear everything. What we get to hear, we're not on that jury, is what the news is reporting. And I hate to say it, but the news is not always accurate. So, or they just tell you things that are inflammatory, whether or not, I don't want to use the word right, wrong, or indifferent, but they want to put it in such a way that it inflames the public. That's who they are. I had a student one time that told me if it bleeds, it reads. So it's just who they are. Now, you mentioning about this business about sanctuary cities. Well, look, first of all, and I don't know if the readers know, I mean the listeners know this or not, but there's only, most people think about sanctuary cities. So let's back up for a second. There are 8 sanctuary states: California, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, and Vermont. So those are states where the whole state is a sanctuary state. All right? Now, that means anybody can go there that's illegal, all right, where they'll be safe. And I'm not getting into whether that's right or wrong. I'm only giving you the information. Now, what we don't think about, we do think about sanctuary cities, but there's also sanctuary counties. So let me give you an idea. California, as an example, has only 6 cities that are sanctuary cities. Berkeley, that's in the Bay Area, L.A., Oakland, Bay Area, all right, Santa Ana, California, that's in Orange County, that's in Southern California, San Francisco, once again, Bay Area, and then Watsonville, which is up further north as well. So you're talking about 6 cities. Now, we actually in California have 14 counties. 14 counties that are sanctuary counties. And again, in my opinion, I think that is a lot. All right? But you think that's a lot? Let me just tell you. They even have in Iowa. I'm like, Iowa? Iowa, there's one city that's a sanctuary city, but they have 13 counties in Iowa that are sanctuary counties. And I look at that and say, Iowa, I mean, that's way in, you know, in the Midwest, where, you know, and it's like, why would they need sanctuary cities way out there? I don't know. You know, Florida's very limited, Georgia's very limited, Connecticut's very limited, and here's Iowa. So then as I did a little bit more research, I'm like, okay, let me check out some of these other places. Louisiana, just New Orleans, that's it. Okay. But then I look at Minnesota, 1 county. Mississippi, Jackson City. It's the city of Jackson. So some of them have very limited, very limited. And then I went on and I found out that Oregon, they've got 31 counties. 31 counties that are sanctuary counties. That's a lot. Then they've only got 1 city. That's it. Springfield. All the rest of them are counties, which can include a number of different cities. So understand that, because they're located within the county. So Oregon's got 31. Now, I got a little bit surprised also with the state of Washington. But then again, that's up by Oregon. Oregon's got 18 counties and only 1 city, which is Seattle. So Seattle's a sanctuary city. You know, so look, I really don't know the rights and the wrongs for this. I don't want to get into that part of it. My thing about the illegals, you know how I feel. I think everybody should come here legally and stand in line just like everybody else that had to do it. I am an advocate of that. My concern is when people think about sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, and things of this nature, and they think about illegals, unfortunately, I think they're only thinking about the Latino community. But understand something. It's not just the Latino community. There are other individuals that are coming in under that same guise, okay, where meaning that, you know, they're coming from other countries. You know, when we talked about those caravans, understand something. Those were not just Latinos in there. There were people coming from all over the world. There were Chinese, Africans, other parts of the Caribbeans. I mean, you know, Middle Eastern. It's not just what you think. And if you turn around and let these individuals in my opinion, I have concerns from a, you know, from a terrorism standpoint. You know, so, you know, I get it. People want to come here and make a living for themselves, to be honest with you. I don't really have, I mean, look, some of the conditions were horrible where some of these people are coming from. So I get it. If I had a family, I'd probably turn around and do the same thing. But my concern is from a domestic terrorism as well as from a international terrorism standpoint. That's my concern. And now if these people come into a sanctuary city, they are a sanctuary county, they're free to move about without any issues. Think about that. Ultimately, that could be problematic. Now, I say things have been quiet on the international side. We've been talking about domestic terrorism, but things on the international side have been quiet. And I just think that, something's brewing. And it's going to be a matter of time, and then we're going to hear about something on the international front, because too much time has passed with that. You know, I was glad to hear about Osama bin Laden's son being taken out because, quite frankly, I'm sure he was planning something big. But just remember something. Whatever he may have been planning doesn't mean that that's gone just because he is. All right? So I don't know. You know, we'll wait and see. So at any rate, you asked me my opinion about it, the sanctuary cities. To be honest with you, I was really surprised to learn that that was that. And I just gave you a few of them. Some of these spread out across the country. Different cities, different states, and things of that nature. But I gave you the states and the cities, or the states that contain the most, all right? And that's going to be a concern. Because if you're talking about the Western Seaboard, you're talking about California, Oregon, and Washington. That's all of our Western Seaboard. All of the states on the Western Seaboard. So, I don't know. We'll wait and see. You know, we have Nevada out here, but they've got sanctuary places also, so I don't know. We'll wait and see. Okay, let's talk about this public health crisis of gun violence, because I thought that that was very interesting, you know, what I read. Now let me just, you know me, I'm always big on statistics. All right, and if anybody has any comments about the sanctuary cities and all of that, you know, as always, feel free to call, or you can email me. If you want to call, just call 818-602-4929. But that's my opinion about it. So it'll be interesting to hear anybody else that wants to talk about it. Most people send emails. I think some people get a little nervous about wanting to be on the air. At any rate, look, getting into this other issue, you know, about this business of the public health crisis of gun violence, because we really don't think about that. But let me just tell you something. Researchers believe that public health really holds the key to reducing the damage caused by these people that are active shooters. So we're not talking about terrorists per se now, all right? And we're always talking about, well, is it mental health? Is it this? Is it that? You know, look, let me just tell you something. Americans that have lost their lives to firearms in 1 year alone, all right, is 39,773. That's from 2017. They're still working on the stats from 2018. And when I get those, I'll let you know. That's almost 40,000 people due to firearms. But listen to this number. 1.625 million is the number of Americans who have died from gunfire since 1968, more than the accumulated American deaths from all wars since the country's founding more than 200 years ago. That's a lot. And these are numbers, by the way, that everybody agrees on. All the scholars agrees on these numbers. All right? You know, nearly everything else that can be said about gun violence in the United States elicits at least a partisan response. I think both sides of the aisle are concerned about these issues. What delays these issues, in my opinion, is because we're down now to a two-party system. And whoever's in power does one thing, the other people don't like it, and vice versa. I've always been an advocate of thinking that, you know, this country, when it was founded, there were a lot of different parties way back when, and they had to basically all get along. Now we're basically down to a two-party system, and I think that's part of the quagmire that's holding things back. Because if you're the one in power, this is the way you want it. You're the one in now power, you're not going to get it your way. We need a third strong party out there, in my opinion. But, you know, we'll see. But now, let me just tell you, a purely scientific approach may hold the key to making progress toward reducing injuries as well as fatalities, in my opinion. Because I'm going to tell you, there is a growing number of researchers, you know, who are beginning to study gun violence in this country as a public health problem, you know. And that's what we need. We need the researchers on it because nobody is really keeping up with it the same way. Now, yes, is the, you know, the Bureau, you know, FBI probably keeping up with certain numbers? And, you know, yeah, I'm sure that they are. But they're already tracking automobile and workplace safety. They've been doing that for decades. So why not start looking at this and the means for why these things are happening? Now, it's limited is the reason why. It's largely due to political obstacles around funding. Here we go again with the funding. Think about funding. Everything has to be approved. Congress has to approve the funding. So if you're going to start a research project, you got to get funding. Now, they do it for automobiles. They do it for workplace violence. But in this area, this area is lacking. I'm going to give you some statistics on that, all right, to show you the difference in terms of what they, you know, what kind of money is thrown at these things. Now, the experts and the social scientists and statisticians say that unbiased, peer-reviewed research is a missing piece of the gun violence discussion. And look, but think about it. Given the magnitude of this problem, and not just in lives lost, but in consequences for the survivors and families, entire communities. Look at the communities that get impacted by this when there's a shooting at a school. The whole community is devastated. And then that flows to the state itself, to the city, and the state. It's all of that. We need a purely scientific approach. I think that may hold a key to making progress toward reducing injuries and fatalities. The problem is, where do you begin? They haven't been investing, you know, enough money in the research. That's why when we hear about it on the news, they're always talking about mental illness, mental illness, mental illness. Some of these guys are simply not crazy. I mean, as crazy as that may sound, okay, they're not necessarily crazy. They have their own objectives. Some people have depression, which I'm not a doctor for that side to know whether or not depression is a form of mental illness or not. You know, not sure. Probably could be a form of it. But sometimes these people are just doing things because they get upset. Okay, it's something that goes on in their lives. This one guy, I forget what state it was, that's getting ready to be tried. He went through a divorce. This was on the news. Some of you may have heard it. He went through a divorce, and he turns around and kills six family members on his wife's side. So he goes in there. He kills these six people. He disguises himself as FedEx or one of those kind of delivery places. And he ends up breaking into their home. He waits for all of them to come over, and it was six of them. And he ties them up, and he executes them, you know, execution style. And one of the victims that day didn't die, and she was young at the time. And now she's coming back to be able to testify. She played dead, and now she's actually testifying against them. But she saw her six family members all killed. You know, and it was all because of a divorce, and he got mad. Now, what is he claiming? Insanity. He's insane. Give me a break. You plan it out like that, you're not insane. And I don't think there's a jury in the country that's going to buy into that defense, not because of the way that was planned. So that's gun violence. That's six people that got killed. So is he insane? We'll find out. We'll see what the jury says. I doubt it. Okay, I can't see it. But, you know, my point being, so this thing about mental illness or why people kill people, we need to take a deeper dive into it, okay, from a social standpoint, if nothing else. Because I can tell you, over the last decade, 374,340 people were killed in motor vehicle accidents, and 342,439 were killed by firearms. And despite the similar numbers of lives lost, research spending on motor vehicles deaths is nearly 16 times greater than on firearm-related fatalities. I kid you not. The average dollar amount spent on federal research funding per death for firearms is $63. $63. It's $1,000 for motor vehicle deaths per person. Now, look at that disparity. And right now, what are we most concerned with? We're concerned with this business about gun violence. There has to be a deeper dive. Now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is a federal agency, by the way, responsible for things such as reducing injuries and violence, had long studied gun violence. But in 1996, they passed an amendment instructing that none of the funds be made available for injury prevention and control at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention that could be used for it to advocate or promote gun control. Now, that language did not ban research. It banned the advocacy or promotion for gun control. But what do you think the knee-jerk reaction was? There it is. So, you know, this is all driven by politics, funding, politics. They need to take a deeper dive into this. Okay, so what happened was when he came out with that back in 96, they basically, the CDC, took itself out of the game. Now, in 2003, there was a provision to the Justice Department appropriations bill called the Tiahrt Amendment, T-I-A-H-R-T. You can look it up. And that dealt another blow. It prevented the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. You've heard it on the news called the ATF. Okay, so anytime there's an explosion, shooters, you know, ATF, okay? That's alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. They prevented them from releasing firearm tracing data, how illegal firearms flow from the manufacturer to sale to use. Now, prior to that amendment, such data had been invaluable to academic research. But then they came out and said, don't do it. So that doesn't make sense to me. If we're trying to get a handle on this, but you can see how far back some of this goes. That was 16 years ago. If we're trying to get a handle on this, why are you preventing it? We need to know. Because that was very useful scientific research going on looking at how guns flow between the United States as a function of how permissive state laws are in terms of gun violence. And the ATF also provided research on time to crime, or the length of time between the gunman's, you know, the gun's purchase and its use in a crime. Now, that kind of information could play a role in determining whether future policies, okay, achieve their desired results. If we're going to talk about gun control, why would we want to stop the research that from when guns are purchased, where they're purchased, who purchased them? Think about that. That's valuable research. Because if you're going to put gun control policies in effect, don't we want some research or data to back up the proposals? That only makes sense to me. Now, people tell me, one of my sons tells me all the time, I overanalyze things. But this to me is common sense. All right? This to me is common sense. Now, I can tell you that among the top 20 causes of death in the United States, research funding varies widely. But funding for gun violence research only receives a very, very small amount. Like I told you, $63 per life lost. Okay, it is the second lowest amount. The second lowest amount. You want to know what the lowest amount is that they're researching? Falls. People falling, if you can believe that. I guess there has to be research on that, but people falling is the only one that's lower than that. Okay? So, look, let me tell you. I think that from the perspective on how we're going to get a handle on these things, I think we need the research. So once again, we have politicians that are talking about gun control. Gun control, gun control, gun control. All they're doing is talking. Yes, do they want to have stricter background checks? Look, the people that committed these acts, think about it. Even with the most recent. Where was the gun control? Well, how are you going to stop that? They had clean backgrounds. What about some of these kids that are becoming school shooters? What background check on any of them? You say, they can't buy guns. Right. So how are you going to do a background check on them when they go in there and their parents are clean, and now they go in there and they take their parents' guns and do the same thing? How is that going to stop a school shooter? All right. The parents have a clean record. They're hunters. What's the problem? All right. The background check's not going to apply to them. And they're still going to have access. Now, you've heard me speak on the show before. And I talk about the fact that I think parents need to secure their weapons because some of these kids are getting them. There's no doubt about that. All right? But once again, we need the research on the whys. When the guns are bought, where they're bought, we need to have those tracing mechanisms out there. Now, I'm going to tell you, a lot of people don't like that. They're going to be talking about their rights are being violated. They're going to talk about the Second Amendment. I get it. I appreciate it. But I think that the research is important at a minimum. And in order to do the research, that means people have to ask questions they have to track, and that some people aren't going to like it. Now, in California, they've instituted where, you have to register in order to buy ammunition now. Now, they're not going to be able to figure out who's got what kind of gun anymore. So what are they doing? What kind of ammunition are you buying? Well, if you say, I want a box of 22 shells, well, now I know you got a 22. If I want, shells for a 12-gauge shotgun, I know that you own a 12-gauge shotgun. So that's how they're doing it. Now, for some people out there, they have a problem with that because they want to say it's an invasion of privacy. How can you do that? You're taking this information and you're only using it because you want to be able to use it against me at some point. Yeah, but in my humble opinion, we've got to do something. They're going to have to start keeping up with the statistical data. Just that simple. Now, if you want to point fingers at somebody, arguably, you can look at some of these gun shows. I think there's some flexibility there, and I know that there's been talk about that. So maybe guns need to be sold through, I don't want to say authorized dealers, because authorized dealers can include, you know, regular businesses and things of that nature. What we can't track, per se, is that here a guy owns, I don't know, you know, 10 guns, and now he passes away, his children get the guns, and now where's the tracking mechanism there? I just don't know how that they're going to ever be able to do this, but I don't think there should be anything wrong with at least doing the research. And why would you stop an organization like the ATF or the CDC from doing something? They're trying. That's better than nothing. And maybe it's what they can do is testify before Congress with some of the information, present this to them so that when they get ready to do these proposals, that they can do what? They've got some data that they can rely on. And where's the mental health data? See, they're not even doing that. Think about it. Research includes, with all of these shooters, how many of them do we know confirm-wise had mental health issues? We can make an assumption somebody had a mental health issue, because who would kill all of these people? They must have been crazy. We need the data. That takes research. Research takes funding. Let's talk about that for these people in politics. Why don't we propose research to look at it deeper? Now, some people say, oh, research takes too long. But look, you've heard me say it before. This isn't an issue that started yesterday. Domestic terrorism has been around since the late 1700s. We're just hearing about that. It always amazes me when I'm talking to people at some of these seminars that I give, and they say, and I say, well, what about some of these things that happened in the 1920s? What about some of that? Huh? What are you talking about? Well, do you think all these issues that are happening just started happening in the last few years? Yeah. Was something happening before that? I'm like, yes. None of this is new. So we could have started the research way back when. So we need to start the research, so hopefully 20 years from now or 10 years from now, we've got something to still fall back on, because these issues are not going to go away. Now, let me tell you what we do know. What we do know about gun violence in the United States is from a purely statistical perspective. All right? What may surprise you, mass shootings make headlines and dominate the public discourse. But roughly 60% of firearm deaths last year, believe it or not, a lot of them were suicides. All right? Not active shooter situations. And in 2018, there was a study on suicide in the United States due to firearms. And they found that the average American firearm suicide is from married white males over the age of 50 who have physical health issues. So, I mean, gun violence is gun violence, but, you know, we got some statistics. So statistics are one thing. But, again, we need the research. All right? We need the research. All right? Now, the key to tackling firearm violence, you guys, in my opinion, I'll close with this, is taking a science-driven public health approach, period. The method, to me, is very simple. The CDC had it. It's straightforward. They define the problems, they identify the risk and protective factors, and they develop and test preventative strategies and ensure their widespread adoption. That's who the CDC is. They take things of a public health concern, and they get the information out there. The problem is, once again, the politicians. See, it always comes back to the same thing, the politicians. They'll talk about it. They won't do anything about it. It's too controversial for them. They're afraid of the votes that they won't get if they speak out against it because of the advocates for the Second Amendment. All right? And people having the right to privacy. I don't know, you guys. I think we're going to keep going around and around in these circles until these politicians get this all together. And don't write me talking about that it's not the Democrats, it's the Republicans. I get that stuff also. Okay? It's both. It's both. Both sides of the aisle, in my opinion. Because we may have a Republican president now, but we had a Democratic president for 8 years. So why wasn't it passed then? So it's all of them. It's not any one side. Okay. We're talking about guns today. Let me give you the tip for the day, all right, because I'm trying to stay on track of always giving you a tip. Now, look, let me give you some basic gun safety rules since we're talking about guns, all right? Now, I know some people that have guns that are probably very familiar with what I'm getting ready to say. There's people who buy guns that absolutely have no idea, you know, what to do with them when they get them. They just buy them. All right. But so keep this in mind. There's four basic safety rules that I want you to think about. Number one, always keep your gun pointed in a safe direction. Never point your weapon at anything you are not prepared to destroy. And that really is the bottom line. Number two, treat all firearms as if they're loaded. Don't let a person with a gun handed to you say it's not loaded. Every gun is loaded. That's got to be your attitude. The gun is always loaded, even if you checked it 30 seconds ago. No exception to that rule. All right? Three, keep your trigger finger outside the trigger guard and off the trigger until your gun is centered on the target and you are ready to fire. That way you don't have any accidental firings and accidentally hurting somebody. Four, be certain of your target, your line of fire, and what lies beyond your target. That's one of the things we learn in the Sheriff's Academy, okay? You always have to look at what's behind your target, because if you miss, you could hit something else, okay, like a person, because bullets can go through and beyond your intended target. So always look at what lies behind your target, okay? So there's some four basic rules, safety rules to keep in mind. And for those of you that are gun advocates out there and you knew all of these, you know what? Hey, never let that guard down. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, spread the word. Do me a favor. Check out that book, Domestic Safety Tips, okay? Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. It's doing very well. All right. So let's keep making those purchases. But until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe. But more importantly, be a reluctant victim.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.